Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
Are you well, Ian? Are you happy?
I am well.
Are your waters in balance?
I don't know what that means, but presumably. I'm alive, so presumably everything in my body's in balance.
You could be lured into a false sense of security with that, I suppose. One wouldn't know if one's waters were out of line until they spilled over the edge. I don't know what that means.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking more about balances, you know, water to salt ratio. These are the sort of things that if you were an absolute quack, you might consider to be medically important.
Good. Very good. Well, I was trying to think of a play on quack to transition us. But it's been actually a very busy week. So discard your clothes, slather yourself in goose grease or whatever you have to hand that will result in you being slippery and pliant. And let's slide into our top stories. Apple announced a load of stuff this week, Ian, and we're not going to talk about most of
Boom.
It, because what's the point? It's well covered. No one cares about our opinion about it, really.
No one cares about our opinion, but we're white middle-class men. Surely everyone must care about everything we think about everything.
Alas, I have to indoctrinate you into the ways of the real world, I'm afraid, Ian.
Fair
But there is one thing I did want to talk about this, because it's something that you know a lot about, and it is something that I think is big news for the industry and will be beneficial to UK listeners and people who are fans of the UK market in particular. This is the addition of Dolby Vision HDR support in the higher-end iPhone 12 models. The phones are going to be able to shoot video in HDR and utilize Dolby Vision's grading techniques. And it will also allow phones not only to capture HDR, but also preview the Dolby Vision HDR grading on the screen, which has now, I think, like a 1200 nits brightness. So you're getting a very sufficiently bright screen to preview HDR content on, as well as edit and share, all while maintaining the Dolby Vision HDR grading metadata as you do it, which is big deal. Apple made a big deal about how this is basically the only device on the planet that lets you do all of those things all within the same device. And at least based on the footage that Apple has shared, admittedly, obviously it's showing the best of the best of the best, but it does look pretty damn amazing. So what I thought would be useful for people to hear is what exactly Dolby Vision HDR is. And I think we need to clear something up, because I've seen this misreported. I've seen people being wrong about something on the internet, which is that people are shooting in Dolby Vision HDR, which is not, as far as I'm aware, technically true. They are shooting HDR, but Dolby Vision is more, it's more like the metadata. It's more the thing that is used for delivery rather than capture. But maybe you could fill us in as to why this is a big deal.
I mean, that is exactly the main point about this, really. It's I found this very interesting when it was announced. I thought, that's interesting. I don't know how it's going to work. And actually, there's not a huge amount of information about how it works, really. But like you said, it is, you don't shoot Dolby Vision. You know, when a movie is shot in Dolby Vision or any other high dynamic range, you're utilizing the fact that a camera sensor or a piece of film has a certain amount of light information in it. You know, maybe 12 or 14 stops of light. And most TVs, obviously, quite basic things, and are able to show a certain amount. But HDR brought in the ability to show much more, and also a technology, you know, the HDR aspect of it, the metadata, which enables you to instruct the TV on what it's expecting, so that it's able to adjust itself to show that in the best possible way. Now, Dolby Vision is one of the better systems. It utilizes a per scene metadata file so that you don't have to constrain your high dynamic range to the entire clip. So with HDR, for example, the actual standard HDR, you know, your TV will have a piece of metadata that describes the whole program. And then what will happen is, you know, the TV will set itself up for that, and then anything outside of that will look clipped or whatever. It you know, various different kinds of problem. And then Dolby means that, you know, you've got a scene in bright sunlight, then you've got a scene indoors at night. The TV can adjust itself correctly for all those as it goes. So it's brilliant. No one should be buying any TV that doesn't have Dolby Vision, if you ask me. So what they're obviously doing here, and the way that Apple describes it, is that the phone is recording two different exposures. So it's essentially recording everything twice. It's recording one in with a I assume overexposed, and one underexposed, and then I guess it's doing what in photographic terms is called bracketing, where you combine those two together, and then you can recover detail from the shadows and from the highlights, and turn them into a photo that has basically the best of both worlds. So that's how photography HDR works, and I guess it's the principle being used here. But what Apple has obviously done is they've managed to come up with a deal with Dolby where they're able then to encode that in the Dolby metadata standard, which then means that you can play those files back on a Dolby Vision TV and get a Dolby Vision experience. Now, I'm not going to pretend I think it's going to be as good as proper cinema stuff, but who knows? This is a fantastic idea and truly amazing for, if you care about shooting video, it's going to be brilliant. And if you're able to put together a film shot on your iPhone, and that they say that you'll be able to edit on the phone from day one, but there'll be updates to Final Cut Pro coming later this year, or apparently iMovie, I think, might already be supported, you'll be able to take those videos and turn them into a proper Dolby Vision thing, which means that you can send them to friends, they can play them on their TVs, you could put them on YouTube maybe. I don't think YouTube supports Dolby Vision, but I'm sure it will eventually. Or you could, you know, theoretically sell them to Netflix, although Netflix doesn't support stuff shot on iPhones as a rule. No. So
they're quite strict on the cameras, I think. That
they are very strict. I mean, that's not to say that you can't get around that. If they opt to buy your product before, you know, regardless, because I know people have done it, have had things on Netflix and they haven't been shot in that way. But if you're shooting a Netflix product, if they've commissioned you, I think you have to stick to certain cameras. Outside that, it's up to them whether they opt to take it or not. But you know, it's theoretically possible. Like if you made something good enough, then it could be on Amazon Prime or, you know, anything.
Now, one of the things that I think makes this even more interesting is the fact that this is being done on a phone. Because when you are shooting a film, and I'm talking sort of medium to high budget standard films, when you're shooting, you are generally controlling the light as well as you're controlling actors and staging and other aspects of the production. Whereas when you're out on holiday or you're filming something funny that your kid's doing in the back garden or whatever you're doing with your phone, you generally have no control over the light over and above whether you're standing inside or outside or something. And so having all of that metadata about light scenes and dark scenes and capturing and having the device capture all that in the phone at the point of recording will give you so much more control potentially over how you view that footage and edit that footage to look better in future than you currently have, and that in a way I think many filmmakers have. And to give you a good example, if you imagine you're on holiday somewhere, like say you're in Rome and you're walking through a dark, narrow little Roman alleyway that's covered up, it's very dark, you've rammed the exposure up a little bit so you can see detail in the brickwork, maybe pull out the face of who you're there with, and then you get to the end and it's a baking hot day and the sun comes in, and your phone naturally adjusts to that. You know, it'll change the aperture, it'll change the exposure, the sensitivity, the ISO to compensate, and you see the picture change. That's the kind of thing that HDR could make a much bigger difference with, because it's going to help you adapt to the light while you're in that alleyway, and while you're then out in the brightness, and as you transition between the two, right? So I think that's something that's going to make a big difference to consumers, whether or not it's an iPhone or another device that's doing it. That's the kind of practical thing where people might not understand what's happening, but they'll notice that somehow it looks better than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really exciting, actually. And I don't know how much control you're going to be able to have over how you expose it post-production, because if the camera's recording both, you should be able to have quite a lot of control later on. And they're not saying that, you know, that they're not doing what film cameras do, where they're recording a very wide dynamic range. It sounds like they're sort of picking two brackets of range, but whether or not you can mix between them later, whether you can sort of mix the, you know, pick to blow out the highlights and increase the detail in the dark, or, you know, what control, I think it's going to be really exciting to see. I'm kind of a bit annoyed that I'm not currently in a position to get review samples for the iPhone, because I feel like it would be an absolutely brilliant thing to look into great detail. Because,
well, we can still do that. I mean,
we should be able to. Yeah,
we can do that, and maybe we'll do a video podcast or something, and we'll test that. But the thing is, you know, what we haven't mentioned as well is that they will record this on the top model in 4K at 60 frames a second,
which is mind blowing.
It is.
I mean, on a phone.
Yeah, I mean, let's just, there will be people who are like, oh, it's not the same as shooting on an SLR. Obviously not. The sensor is smaller. It's capturing less light. You can always tell, I think, if you're a pixel peeper, you can tell from the level of compression or whatever that something's shot on a phone, and the lens curvature and things like that. Like, you can obviously tell, but it still looks better than what it replaces. And that's the point. And things like HDR will make a bigger difference, I think, to people's videos than
I think
perhaps.
It's going to look very good on HDR TVs. I think it will add a level of quality that people will just be blown away by. Like, I can't remember some discussion about some time ago when Dolby sat people down and showed them a 1080p HDR clip compared to a 4K clip, and people were
4K standard.
Standard dynamic range on 4K, and people were so blown away by the HDR that they didn't care about the extra detail. It was an irrelevance. And you know, if you're someone who's interested in shooting things in a film style, then, you know, there's some real possibilities in terms of what the iPhone offers now that are really exciting, you know, to be completely honest. It's because you will get a certain look that will be quite cool. I agree with you. I'd love to see them do some, maybe an anamorphic lens in the iPhone Pro, because if they're really serious about making these different, then having like a lens that compresses the image to a 4:3 sensor that then you expand out to be 1.85:1 or 2.35:1. That is a huge part of the look of cinematography in some films, you know, where you get those very streaky lights, is a classic example of an anamorphic lens. But it is also one of the most cinematic things that you can add. I mean, people talk about high frame rates not looking cinematic, which is true, they don't. You know, you have to have 24 frames, and the anamorphic lens is again, it's something that you would never know. Most people would look at it and go, I can't tell if that was shot on a spherical lens or an anamorphic lens. But there is always a feel to movies, and one of those feels is anamorphic lenses. So it'd be good to see them do something like that. You can get add-ins. You can get like a little lens that bolts to the front and gives you an anamorphic thing to compress an ultra-wide, which is quite exciting anyway. Combine that with this Dolby Vision. The fact they're obviously clearly recording 10-bit colour now as well. Now, that alone, 10-bit, is huge. Like, most... my monitor that sits in front of me at the moment is an expensive monitor, and it's still 8-bit, and it obviously is capable of very good things, but 10-bit color gives you so much extra detail. It would look fantastic. I'm really excited to see it. I can't wait to see some samples.
Well, you mentioned lenses, and we've talked on the show before, and I think we talked with Andy when Andy was on the show about the benefits of attachable lenses to the camera. And I just noticed John actually in our live chat suggested Moment, and I've actually got a bunch of the Moment lenses. And
you don't have the anamorphic one, do you?
I don't. I've got three. I don't know which ones they are. One's an ultra wide, one's telephoto, one's something else. I think I think Andy may have got some more recent ones, but I haven't used the anamorphic one. But they're very good. I see them still as being like a very posh filter, because they are still a lens in front of the existing pieces of glass that form the camera unit on a phone, and you're still dealing with that. Whereas when you replace a lens, you are replacing all, basically everything that sits between the lens and the world. So I do think it'd be good to get to that point, but I don't believe Apple would ever do that within the body of the phone itself. Does feel like the thing that Apple would, and indeed other companies have, let you do by connecting up a device either wirelessly or with USB, because it appeals to the pros who want to use those kind of features, and it doesn't add weight and complexity and cost and everything else to a product that most people won't benefit from. Because the cameras on iPhones and the latest Samsungs are so good for the vast majority of people, that they don't need those sorts of things. It's the law of diminishing returns, isn't it? Whereas with HDR, that is something that will directly benefit everyone out of the gate, I think is totally doable.
Completely agree. John also asked if it would be compatible with HDR10. I suspect not, but there probably is a way of doing it. There might be a third-party app that would allow that, which would be quite exciting, because I guess what you could do is you could pick a range for the whole clip that you've made. So it's possible. It might just require extra third-party software.
You definitely can convert Dolby Vision to HDR10, but I think it's done at the point of display, isn't it? Like, I know some projectors do it.
Yeah.
But we're getting into the weeds, I think, a little bit with that. I think, you know, to anyone who is going to get one of these phones, whether it's Dolby Vision, whether it's HDR10, whether it's something else, they're not going to notice a massive difference there, I don't think, for individual clips. And I do think that this, for everyone, is going to be a really big deal. Of course, the proof will be in the pudding, and we haven't tested one of these yet, but the fact that it's possible for this to exist, and the fact that the results, at least from Apple's announcement, make it look like this is going to be something pretty amazing. And I'm very excited to take a look at it. But you also don't have to get an iPhone in order to get Dolby Vision content. Like, HDR has been around for quite a while. If you buy content from iTunes, for example, with movies, most of those are in Dolby Vision that are released now, and Dolby Atmos. And Netflix and Amazon also use a variety of HDR formats, so you can get that benefit. It's not just confined to phones, but the exciting thing is that it's coming to phones. So any thoughts and questions you have for Ian, more Ian, because he knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, you can send that to us, of course, uktechshow@icloud.com. The Advertising Standards Agency has banned two Facebook ads from the games Homescapes and Gardenscapes. Both of these ads, which were initially posted in March and April of this year, depicted a pin puzzle minigame. One of them showed a woman being locked away with a burglar between her and the main character of Playrix's games. That's the company that makes them. With the player challenged to remove the pins in a way that reunites the couple without them encountering the burglar. Now, at the top of the video, or the bottom on some of them, the text noted, "Not all images represent actual gameplay." Now, this is all per a write-up on Games Industry this week by, it was James Batchelor who wrote this. But on the ASA website, for its ruling, the regulator wrote that seven complainants who believed the ad's content were not representative of either of the two games had challenged whether the ads were misleading. The majority of the game is match three. It's a Candy Crush clone, essentially, where you match brightly colored things and then you advance to another level, and as you advance you get a bit of story and you get to decorate a house and stuff like that.
Right.
It's actually very, very popular, but there's, to my eyes, there's nothing original about it at all. But the advert suggests that it's, you know, a puzzler where you're pulling pins and reuniting couples and rather than burglars or something, and it isn't.
Yeah, I can sort of see the point of that then. It's misrepresenting what the game actually is. But, I mean, it seems odd to complain about that.
Now, in response, Playrix said that users finished their journey near the start of the game. I love the explanation there of them being a journey.
For example, and that they start at the start. How unexpected.
Well, it says actually they finished their journey near the start of the game. But they actually gave stats here. So they said, for example, that only around 45% of players achieved level 20. So you've got to bear in mind here that this is a game with about 5,000 levels.
Good Lord.
Depending on the game. Gardenscapes has close to 6,000 levels. So nearly half of them only get to level 20. Around 18% get to level 100. But part of the problem is that while there were elements of the advertisement's depiction of gameplay that did appear in the game, they appeared really far down the game, and therefore almost nobody actually got to see them. In fact, I saw a figure that was something like less than 1%, which you can believe if so few people actually get through the games. Now, the developer did say that they've since changed the games so that the same gameplay that was being shown in the ads was available towards the beginning of the games, as opposed to being confined towards the end where they were originally, and that they believed that now, because most players were able to see them, it was more representative. The ASA upheld the complaints, though, and said that the ads had breached advertising standards, preventing misleading advertising and exaggeration, and they were banned from appearing in their current form. Although, I have to say, I know we referred to them as being Facebook ads. I saw one of these ads in my game Penguin Isle this morning. I love my little game about flightless birds, but unfortunately it does have some ads in it, and one of them was for one of these god-awful ads. However, just before I open this up to you, Mr. Morris, I did want to point out that I almost made a complaint about one of these ads, but not for this reason. Because there was one ad, and I cannot remember if it was specifically for Gardenscapes or Homescapes or another one, but they are right. The ads were basically identical. They have these pins being pulled out to let water or something fall down into a room. There was one where there was a tiger in the bottom compartment of a house, and above it there was some water or there was some lava, and the ad just said "kill the tiger."
Oh dear!
And it was prompting you to pour lava onto the tiger. And I screenshotted it, and I was going to make a complaint because I just thought that's pretty despicable. And I think that's part of the problem with this ad, is that it wasn't representative of the game.
But I mean, that's a good point, isn't it? Like, you know, why would you target these ads for that when they are, it is part of the game? Okay, maybe it's not a huge part of the game. And it baffles me. Like, why not show a bit of the game that's more representative of it? Because you're much less likely to get people downloading it and being disappointed then, aren't you? Like, what you don't want is your App Store score to be hammered by the fact that game was not what I expected, not like advertised kind of thing. That would be more damaging for low ratings, I would say. Why not put in some of the actual play? And then, you know, if you wanted to put in this pin thing as, you know, part of the mini games, then yeah, sure, that makes sense. I get what they're saying. I just don't understand why people are seeing this as a huge problem. Like, advertising is not always entirely honest, is it? Although I suppose it's supposed to be. But a lot, they push it as far as they can always, and I can sort of see why people might have got sick of it. But at the same time, I don't know. It just feels like such a waste of time.
Well, I disagree, because I think somebody needs to be taking a stand against ads in games that may otherwise slip by review. And there are other games ads that I've seen recently that are far more concerning to me, which basically make it look like you roll some dice and play a quiz, and your prize is money landing in your PayPal account, and you know, complete with the PayPal logo and people getting notifications that they've received money, and a lot of money, like four figures money in their PayPal account. There's just no way that those ads would pass muster if investigated by a body like the ASA, or indeed anyone with half a brain. It's at best gambling, and it's at worst massively deceptive and unreasonably executed.
Are games like that regulated by the Gambling Commission? Are these games that are even legal?
Well, that's in the question, and I don't want to go down that road because I haven't done the research on that part of it. But if it's determined as gambling, then it would be seen and ruled on as gambling.
Or do you pay to play them?
Well, this is the question. How do you? Like, they're because free to download, and you have to, like all of these games, you pay with micropayments. And I'm not referring to a specific game. There are loads of them. There are lots and lots of these games, and they always pop up as ads in free-to-play games. So,
you should start taking a note of them, because I think this is really interesting, and I'd like to look into it.
Okay.
Because obviously, you know, things like quizzes are where there's an element of true skill, they're not considered to be lotteries. And so therefore a prize, if you've paid to play, and a prize as a result of that, if you answer all the questions right and no one else does, you know, like HQ, for example, probably wouldn't fall under the Gambling Commission because it's not gambling. But if you're paying and it's not true skill, and there's a, you know, it's a randomized chance that you'll win or something like that, then it becomes more difficult. And I don't, without knowing how the ins and outs of how they work, but I find it very interesting. And I suspect that because there's such a large number of these games, it's almost impossible for them to be properly regulated. And the way I understand it works is there are Chinese factories which turf out a number of games, probably in the hundreds. What they do is they see which ones pick up some traction, and then they throw a lot of, you know, advertising money behind them. So, for example, when I don't even want to say the name of it, because obviously we're not sponsored by it and we wouldn't accept the money if they tried. But Raid Shadow Legends, for example, is across pretty much every YouTube video, or it was for a while. You know, that's one game out of a whole bunch of games that are probably based on exactly the same basic mechanic, where they just switch out assets to make them different, and they see which one does well, and then they push all the money behind that, and then they get a big game. So, you know, there's all sorts of things like that going on, but they're, you know, none of them are, they're all sort of foreign, which makes it very, very difficult, because it's, you know, it's very difficult to regulate a game if it's just coming from outside. It's not like there's a British company that knows the British laws and sticks to, you know, British law to service this country. It's like they're, you know, coming in from a board where the rules aren't the same.
You're right, and the ads as well are being delivered via ad networks, not by the games, not by Apple and Google.
Yes.
Google is in Google Play. I don't know if Google itself distributes some of these ads.
Well, it probably does, let's be realistic. I mean, Google basically owns the ad network for everything, so... Mm.
It's challenging, but I'd welcome anybody who's got any views on this, and if they've experienced any games with really obnoxious ads in the style that we've been discussing. Any thoughts and suggestions and ideas and observations and horrendous ads that you would like to complain at, do send them to us, uktechshow@icloud.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Hi.
Well, on last week's show, we talked at great length about what did we talk about? Health data.
It was healthcare and how the NHS manages your patient record.
Yeah, and we talked at length about some of the different ways that you can access your patient health data, and it was off the back of it being added to phones for certain hospitals and medical institutions in the UK for the first time. And one of the topics that came up was, huh, how does this compare to other places that have had this technology deployed more widely for a while, one of which being the US. We joked about Tom from Daily Tech News Show listening, and being the wonderful gent that he is, within about an hour of the show going out, he sent us some cracking feedback on how this compares to what's going on stateside. So let's have a listen, shall we? Shall we, Ian?
Yes, let's.
Okay.
So I'm not an expert in healthcare records in the United States. I can only really talk about my own experience here and a little bit of research that I did to answer your question. But essentially, we don't have a healthcare record. And this may be true outside of the United States, but I found this out when I had what's called a frozen shoulder. I won't get into it, but I had to get an MRI. And I was able, in my health app on Apple's iOS, to log in to get my MRIs. And I thought, this is great. I will be able to go in and I'll see my health records. So I was able to, you know, see my results, see the diagnosis, see the actual inside of my shoulder pictures, which I promptly Instagrammed. And I thought, well, okay, what else can I get? The answer was nothing. The hospital where I had had my MRI was the only one of my healthcare providers participating at that time. And since that time, none of the others have joined either. More recent example, I had a wound on my ankle, and instead of going the 30 minutes to an hour to my doctor's office, which is, you know, she's my general practitioner, I just went to the local urgent care. Because that was faster and my healthcare insurance was going to cover it. So I went in there, got treated, etc. When I did go to my doctor for my regular appointment, she asked me, oh, well, what did they treat you with? And I was like, oh, I don't remember. She didn't have access to the records. The reason why, this is according to the United States Health and Human Services website on rules for individual medical records, a healthcare provider or health plan may send copies of your records to another provider or health plan only as needed for treatment or payment or with your permission. So my doctor could have gotten those records. She didn't have them. She would have had to get my permission to request them in this case because I was no longer being treated for that, even though she was my doctor, even though it was covered by the same health insurance. We have HIPAA, the laws that protect privacy, that keep you from being able to let your doctors see your health records. Now, that's meant on purpose. That's meant to actually keep your records private, and that's good. But that's kind of the state of the health records here in the United States. From my perspective, I'm sure there's other things that are more apparent to people who are steeped in this knowledge and work in it. But there you go. Hope that helps you understand a little more about the U.S. system, or lack of.
Thank it you. Does indeed.
Yeah, it definitely does indeed. There is one point I do want to make to Tom as a good friend of mine, which is I hope he's looking after himself, and because he seems to be having to go with accidents and injuries to be treated quite a lot based on that message. So take care, Tom.
Well, I don't know how old Tom is. I suspect he's around my age, and I can tell you that injuries and maladies are an increasing problem as you reach older ages.
Tom is slightly older than you, Chief, but it is not my place to say how much. But
no,
it,
absolutely not.
But it is for me to say thank you for him taking the time to record that and send it in, because it does definitely helps me understand where we're at in the UK with the shareability of data records for our own healthcare. Because I actually think we're probably in a similar position at the moment if you're switching between, say, private and NHS hospitals. like getting access to that data is not necessarily going to be as easy as just, oh, let me just pull it up on my phone, which it feels like it should be. And it feels like is where we're going with the kind of thing that we're talking about on last week's show. But we're not there yet. We're definitely, definitely not there yet.
At least the NHS operates under one umbrella. So from our perspective, there's no privacy concern with one NHS place sharing your data with another. That gives us a very slight advantage over the American system where there is no one provider. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out in the future.
Yeah, definitely. But it sounds like it's going to make a big difference on both sides of the Atlantic if it's done correctly. So thank you again, Tom, for that. I also wanted to just take a moment to thank our patrons, which we normally do at the start of the show, but I thought let's move it into the middle of the show. Let's make it the filling of a podcast sandwich. And for those people, they've been listening to our extended version of the show. Thank you to some recent ones. We've got Paul Locke, we've got James Strangeway, we've got CJ from the UK, and that's in addition as well to many, many others and the people who are still listening to us live. And you can join them. You can get our full-length show. You can get our Patreon-exclusive sister show, Extra Message. We've done nearly 50 of those, Ian. I think I published episode 49 of Extra Message this week. There's a lot of stuff out there, and you get access to the whole back catalogue of those when you sign up. So maybe give us a few quid, supporters, patreon.com/UK Tech. And thank you, Tom, for chiming in, of course, from Los Angeles with his insight. Timely insight, no less, on the state of US healthcare. Guess what we're going to do now, Ian? Can you have a guess?
Finish the show?
Sort of. Have another guess.
We're going to ask Tom to come back and tell us what's in BTNS.
Yeah, hang on. Let me go and get him in through the door. Hang on one sec.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, of course, we covered all the new iPhones, the new HomePod Mini, but we also talked about an animatronic dolphin that could save other dolphins. We compared Facebook and Twitter's response to a controversial New York Post story about the U.S. election. We didn't think they did very well. We also chat about Sony's $5,000 3D monitor, why it actually might be worth it, and discussed a company called Clear's plan to hold all your identity information in order to make your life easier. I'm sure Ian will have no problem with that. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Do you know about Clear?
I don't actually know.
No,
I don't think.
Now, I'd never heard of Clear until I heard that episode, like a passporting system that basically means you're just practically waved through security at airports because they've already got your documentation. And that was an amazing thing to hear, because I was like, oh my god, that sounds both amazing and how has that not been wildly abused before now. But yes, very easy. And you will disagree, Ian.
Okay.
I think
cool.
That might be a great debate to have.
Yeah.
About that. But thank you, Tom. Charlotte asked if Tom was out eating an apple. He wasn't. It's although I have another apple here, my second of two apples. That's because we are a dual core podcast.
An apple dual core at that.
Oh my god, you're right. Hang on, if I do this, now it actually looks like the Apple logo in my hand. Well, I think on that note, Ian, I have now swallowed that bit of apple. I assume you have something to go and swallow. So off you talk.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.